Reading with you this morning from the Danville Commercial News. This is the weekend edition for Saturday and Sunday, January 18th and 19th, 2025. We'll start our time together this morning on the front page with a safer pregnancy thanks to community support. Georgetown Legion Post 203 donates blood pressure monitors to prenatal patients by Kayla White of the Danville Commercial News. Almost a dozen patients with a high risk of developing a life-threatening prenatal condition can rest easy today, thanks to two bartenders at the Georgetown American Legion Dornblazer Post 203. As a bartender at the Legion, Cody Cochran hears a lot of local gossip and news. When Katie Tuggle, a prenatal nurse at Carl, who also works with Cochran as a part-time bartender, told him about the plight some of the patients were facing, he knew something had to be done. Some pregnant patients can develop preeclampsia, a condition that can cause organ failure and even death. Regular blood pressure monitoring at home can help catch the condition before it gets out of hand. Tuggle was concerned when some of her patients couldn't afford to purchase an at-home monitor. A lot of the time, they do not have the means to purchase medical items that they need to be compliant with their care, Tuggle said. The medical supply facility in town no longer offers them, and insurance will not cover them in pharmacies. When Cochran heard about the issue, he sprung into action, Tuggle said. Every Friday, the Legion hosts a Queen of Hearts tournament and a 50-50 drawing, with proceeds being donated to various causes in the community. When we found out their insurance wouldn't pay for the cuffs, we decided to dedicate our last few drawings to raise money for them, Cochran said. With the $200 they raised, they were able to purchase 10 blood pressure monitor cuffs for patients in need. Tuggle was grateful for Cochran's swift assistance, she said, and wanted to publicly recognize the Legion for it. It isn't often anymore you hear positive things within our community like this, she said. Cochran, who worked as a paramedic for years, said providing assistance for medical care is a cause that's near and dear to his heart. We're a family here, and she's a member of our family who is requesting help. Anything we can do to help our community is something we always try to do, Cochran said. Thank you, Legion. On the front page in local entertainment news, Cotter Grimm Theatrical Storytellers perform Ladies Sigh No More, again by Kayla White. Several ill-fated Shakespearean ladies work through their trauma and seek closure in an afterlife sanitarium in Ladies Sigh No More, performed by Cotter Grimm Theatrical Storytellers this weekend. A comedy drama performed by the local theater group and directed by Brooke Tuccelli, this play tells the story of several female characters who were killed off in Shakespeare's plays and who are working through their issues as they wait for eternal peace. Things take a turn when Juliet Capulet Montague shows up and a mysterious man takes a special interest in their fates. Performances will take place at 18 East North Street in Danville, and tickets are $16 to be purchased at the door. There's also national news on our front page today, and this is a CNHI special report, Business Owners and Workers Still Unsure of Trump's Immigration Plans, by Mariah Moore. Across the nation, migrant workers are employed in agricultural, construction, and other positions, filling jobs many American citizens don't want and won't perform. In the U.S., the need for foreign workers to fill seasonal agricultural positions under H-2A grew nearly 65% between 2017 and 2023, from 22,965 to 378,034. Roughly half of hired crop workers lack legal immigration status in the U.S., according to a recent U.S. Agriculture Department report. Last year, President-elect Donald Trump, who will be sworn in for a second term on Monday, offered support for the H-1B visa program for highly educated immigrants. The category gives employers a chance to petition for foreign professionals to work in specialty occupations that require at least a bachelor's degree or the equivalent, according to the American Immigration Council. Jobs in fields such as mathematics, engineering, technology, and medical services often qualify, the council noted. How President-elect Donald Trump's promised mass immigration deportation plan will impact business across the country, ranging from farms to hospitals, that rely on both the highly and lower educated migrant worker is murky. That is the case at Fermano Foods, a family-owned company in central Pennsylvania that harvests, cans, and packages beans, tomatoes, ancient grains, and vegetables. Fermano's could not successfully complete tomato or green bean season without their help, Dan Severin, Vice President of Agricultural Operations at Fermano Foods, said last fall. Fermano Foods hires foreign seasonal workers who are permitted to work in the United States under temporary visas such as the H-2A programs. Pennsylvania's U.S. Representatives Glenn G.T. Thompson and Dan Mauser offered no specifics when asked about President-elect Trump's plan other than it will focus on ousting criminals. It is important to clarify the distinction between illegal immigrants and lawful migrant workers, Representative Mauser said. Businesses in Pennsylvania's 9th District, particularly in the agriculture and service industries, rely heavily on lawful migrant workers to meet critical labor needs. I recognize the importance of these workers and the need to reform and strengthen programs like H-2A and H-2B to ensure they better serve employers and workers alike, which is why I'm favorable toward reforms such as extending work visa programs from seasonal to annual. These programs are vital for our local economy, and I remain committed to supporting policies that bolster their effectiveness while upholding the rule of law. Congressman Thompson, who serves as chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, declined to comment on how the deportations would occur or how much it could cost, but acknowledged the labor shortage as a critical issue for the agriculture industry, where an estimated 30,000 of Pennsylvania's 155,000 undocumented immigrants work, according to the State Department of Agriculture. During a meeting with members of the Sunbury, Pennsylvania Daily Item editorial board last fall, Thompson addressed the need for migrant workers. We can do better when it comes to the agricultural workforce, said Representative Thompson. There are a lot of Americans who won't do that work today. We're absolutely dependent on these workers, he said. I wish we could say we have all the help we need from the U.S. citizens, but we don't. It's hard work. It pays well, but not everybody likes working outdoors. More recently, Thompson said the issue highlights the importance of viable legal options for agricultural employees in need of immigrant labor, such as the H-2A visa program. In his role as chairman of the House Committee on Agriculture, Thompson has formed a group to examine the H-2A program and help producers address workforce challenges in a sustainable and legal way. Current temporary visa programs like H-2A, which serve seasonal agricultural workers, and H-2B for non-agricultural workers, have limits that frequently cause businesses to rely on undocumented workers to fill jobs domestic laborers don't want. Brad Hollebach said last fall that his family's 96-year-old fruit and vegetable farm in Biglerville, Pennsylvania, couldn't harvest without the help of the migrant workers. Well, as you're listening to this morning, if you've been outside, you know that the weather is bitter, bitter cold. So it's no surprise that we find some tips in our paper today that will help us with this cold blast of Arctic air. Here's the headline. Aqua offers tips to help customers avoid frozen pipes. Proactive steps can protect homes and plumbing systems when the temperature drops. Aqua offers tips to help customers avoid frozen pipes. This is a staff report. Temperatures are beginning to plummet, and Aqua is urging customers to act now to prevent frozen pipes, which can lead to costly repairs and significant disruptions in water service. Pipes are at higher risk of freezing when temperatures stay below freezing for extended periods of time. Preventive measures can help you avoid expensive cleanups and repairs. So tips to prepare before the freeze. 1. Stock up on supplies. Keep pipe insulation, heat tape, and a portable space heater and a hairdryer on hand. Locate and mark your master water valve. This will allow you to quickly shut off water to your home if a pipe bursts. 3rd item, inspect your outdoor meter pits. Ensure that the lids are intact to prevent freezing in these areas. Winterize your outdoor faucets. Shut off and drain your outdoor faucets, including those connected to lawn sprinkling systems. And one of the other precautions they say in preparation, eliminate drafts in unheated areas. Insulate your crawl spaces and basements, repair broken windows, and seal gaps to protect pipes. Precautions to take during freezing weather? Wrap your pipes in meters, using insulation materials or heat tape on your pipes, and wrap indoor meters with a blanket. Keep your cabinets open. If you have interior plumbing along an exterior wall, leave your cabinet doors open to allow warm air to circulate around the pipes. And run a small stream of water. If temperatures fall below 10 degrees, leave a thin stream of water running from the faucet farthest from your meter. What to do if your pipes freeze? Thaw safely. If you locate a frozen section of pipe, open a spigot and use a hairdryer or heat tape to thaw it gradually. Never use an open flame. And call a professional. If you cannot thaw the pipe, contact a licensed plumber for assistance. For more information on pipe protection, visit aquawater.com. Well, this cold weather often keeps us inside, and if you happen to have 4th and 5th grade students, this might be an interesting way to keep them busy in an indoor project. There's a poster contest and an open house planned for Lincoln's birthday. The 4th and 5th grade students are encouraged to participate in a Lincoln birthday poster contest hosted by the Vermilion County Museum Society. The contest is in conjunction with an open house celebrating Abraham Lincoln's 216th birthday on Sunday, February 9th. Students are encouraged to enter a birthday poster for Mr. Lincoln through their school or individually. and posters will be accepted at the museum at 116 North Gilbert Street until 4 p.m. on Friday the 31st. Entries should be no larger than a sheet of letter-sized paper and include the student's name, teacher, and school or homeschool representative. Students should include a short verse about Lincoln or one of his famous quotes on their poster. All entries will be on exhibit in the museum for an open house and until February 28th, after which they will be returned to the students. Prizes for the winning cards will be awarded, and this contest and the open house are being sponsored by Judy Kay and Jonathan Myers from the Myers Group Morgan Stanley. For additional information, contact the museum at 217-442-2922. Here's some additional news as we look to Martin Luther King Day, which is on Monday, January 20th. The MLK parade and motorcade have been canceled due to weather. Because of the pending report for inclement weather on Monday, January 20th, the motorcade parade planned for Martin Luther King Jr. Day has been canceled. Temperatures will only reach a high of 7 degrees on Monday, with wind chills expected to dip to minus 15 degrees. The community-wide service at St. James United Methodist will still go on. That event is set for Monday, January 20th at 11:30 a.m. The Reverend Dr. Crystal Thomas, who's the senior pastor at New Zion Tabernacle of Fort Wayne, Indiana, will serve as the speaker for the service. The service includes the presentation of a $6,000 MLK scholarship to a Danville graduating high school senior. In addition, an ensemble of singers under the direction of MLK Music Director Brett Dupree will perform at the service. On a special note, in honor of over 25 years of serving as the MLK Music Director, the MLK Committee will also give a special tribute to Mr. Brett Dupree. So again, for those of you planning to attend, that is Monday, January 20th at 11:30 a.m. Well, more in our local events, Nature at Night comes to Kennecuck. The Vermilion County Conservation District will host a four-part Nature at Night educational series at Kennecuck County Park in 2025. The first of the four programs will be Illinois Owls, and it will take place Thursday, February 6th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. in the Kennecuck Education Center. While it may be cold outside, the winter months are a busy time for Vermilion County owls with their breeding and nesting season. This program will begin with an indoor presentation about owls and their adaptations at the Kennecuck Education Center, followed by an outdoor exploration for a chance to see or hear them. Pre-registration is required at nat-nowls.eventbrite.com. The cost is $5 per person with limited registration space, and all children under the age of 16 must be accompanied by an adult. Additional programs include Illinois Bats on Saturday the 21st, Nocturnal Animals on Friday, August 15th, and Myths, Legends, and Lore on Wednesday, October 8th. For details about all of them, of the 2025 Nature at Night educational series, follow Eventbrite Nature at Night educational series or reach out to the Kennecuck County Park. They're located at 22296 Henning Road in Danville. We'll wrap up our community events section today by talking about some community briefs, the other things to get on your calendar. Duncan to speak at the Lions meeting. Natalie Duncan, the executive director of the Danville Library Foundation, will speak at the Danville Lions Club at noon on Thursday, January 23rd. The Lions Club meets at Spanky's Banquet Hall at 409 East Main Street. The Catlin Public Library is hosting a puzzle day on Martin Luther King Day on January 20th. So up to four people can sign up for a table at noon or two and compete to complete a 400-piece puzzle. The fastest time of the day wins a $20 in Mad Goat gift certificates. The SWCD will be meeting. The regular board meeting of the Vermilion County SWCD will be Tuesday, January 21st at 8:30 a.m. at the USDA Service Center at 1905A on U.S. Route 150 in Danville. And finally, the DAC board will be meeting. The Danville Area Community College Board for Trustees will meet on Thursday the 23rd at 5 p.m. in the boardroom of Vermilion Hall, room 302. The college is located at 2000 East Street in Danville. Concludes our community briefs for the day. As we reach the midpoint of today's readings, we'll take a pause and take a look at today's death notices. Two, Herbert L. Mormon. Herbert L. Mormon, 81, of Danville, passed away at OSF Sacred Heart on Sunday, December 29th. He'll be laid to rest in a private service beside his parents at Oak Ridge Cemetery. Messages and memories may be left on the website at www.krugercoandpape.com or on the Kruger Funeral Home Facebook page. Memorials may be made in Herbie's name to any local animal shelter of your choice or the Wounded Warrior Project. Donna Jean Wilkerson. Donna Osborne Wilkerson died January 9th at home in Danville. She will have a visitation to be held on Friday, January 24th from 9 to 11 a.m. with services immediately following at the Sunset Funeral Home in Danville. Cremation will follow the funeral services with interment of her ashes for the family at the Swan Court Chapel Mausoleum in the Sunset Memorial Park at a future date to be decided. In lieu of flowers, donations in her memory can be made to Lakeview College of Nursing. Please join the family in sharing memories, photos, and videos on Donna's tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. Well, let's take a turn off of hard news and look to our editorial section today. For those of you that have listened to me read in the past, you know I have a special affinity for Kevin Cullen, the Irish hiker. I find that his works are, thought-provoking. So let's take a look at what he has to say today. Today's headline from Kevin Cullen is, "Kids still like the simple things." A young mother smiled as her rosy-cheeked daughter clutched the sides of her red plastic sled and swooshed down the snow-covered hill. "I just love it that kids still like the simple things," the woman said. She's absolutely loving this. With temperatures well below freezing, the recent mini snowstorm brought an uncommon opportunity for our family to enjoy the timeless fun of sledding. Memories. It's probably 1959 or 1960, and I can still remember Dad buying a toboggan for my brother Pat and me. Shiny varnished slats of Ben Oak, green plastic pad, and a stencil that reads, "Made in Canada." He got it at the old Weiss Sporting Goods store on Vermilion Street. From there, we drove to Harrison Park for a thrilling afternoon of sledding. Lots of kids were there, bundled up and blasting themselves down the hills on toboggans, flexible flyers, inner tubes, aluminum discs, even pieces of cardboard. The most amazing sled of all was the hood of an old car. Several boys turned it upside down, jumped aboard, and barreled their way through the crowd on the flat ground at the bottom. If that bulky freight train of a sled had ever hit someone, that someone would have ended up in Lakeview or Street E. Children today often are immersed in wondrous technologies. Video games, TV, the internet, Facebook, Instagram, and phones that do everything but scratch your back. But the simple joys of childhood past has never gone out of style. Most kids still ride bicycles, swim, play catch, swing on swings, teeter or totter, climb up trees, play tag, and slide down snow-covered hills. Earlier this week, Lori and I took our two grandsons, ages 8 and 5, to the same hilly city park that we took their mothers to when they were little. It's the place to go sledding, and its wooded hills are filled with kids and sleds whenever the ground is frozen and the snow has fallen. Hay bales are placed around the base of trees so no one's hurt when there are collisions. Patrick 8 had gone sledding before. He brought his sled, a lightweight plastic job. He placed it at the top of the main hill, stepped back about 20 feet, ran fast, and launched himself into new fun land. Down the hill he went, bouncing as he hit the bumps, curving up one embankment, then returning to the main channel. We watched as his yellow stocking cap rose and fell, then saw him wave as he grabbed the pull rope and started to drag his steed back to the top. Charles 5 was new to sledding. He was all smiles as he watched his cousin perform. With his mom sitting behind him and doing the steering, Charles plopped into the front section, crossed his legs, and held on. Down the hill they went, hitting some bumps, missing others, and making it all the way to the bottom without a crash or a bailout. As Lori and I watched, 30-plus years seemed to vanish. We could still see our girls, Ruthie and Liz, all bundled up and eager to hit the slopes. I could hear them say, "Come on, Daddy. We'll go down together, and give us a push, Mom." Now Ruth's Patrick and Liz's Charles are doing the same thing and loving every snowy second. Like the young mother that we just met, I just love it. The kids still like the simple things. You enjoyed that message today from Kevin Cullen. You can comment to Kevin at his email address at irishhiker@aol.com. Continuing this theme of cold, let's take a look at today's staff report with the headline, "Scouts Challenge Fire and Ice with Cold Weather Skills." A dynamic theme will highlight the annual outdoor competition of the Prairie Lands Council Scouting America for the yearly Winter Challenge event. The event is set for Camp Robert Drake on Saturday, January 25th near Oakwood. Just like the Arctic conditions of Alaska, scouts will travel via snow sleds with their survival gear attached for a series of cold weather contests. The Klondike Derby competition is the ultimate winter sporting event, including contests of strength, speed, and outdoor techniques. Scout patrols will be tested on survival shelter making, lashing rescue gear, and fire building in freezing conditions. Emergency rescue action will also be experienced with first aid simulations. The Klondike Derby is an amazing team-building experience for young men and women in grades 6 to 12, the news release states. Scout patrols from over 40 troops from Illinois and Indiana will converge on Camp Robert Drake, located on the Salt Fork River near Oakwood. Several of the troops will have camped overnight in tents in the winter weather. Following the opening flag ceremony at 9, each group of 6 to 8 scouts, a patrol, will traverse the ice and snow across the frosty terrain to contests of skill throughout the camp. The skill competitions judge each patrol on teamwork, scout spirit, and skill level. 12 contests are spread across the 410-acre camp involving this year's fire and ice theme. The grand finale following the skills competition is the championship sled race. At the end of the day, all the patrols and their sleds are lined up on the large plateau field. The scouts will serve as their team of huskies and pull their dog sled through the woods. Upon the signal, scouts race their sleds like a speeding wagon train, sliding across the field as fast as possible, and the Yukon Jack Trophy is presented to the winning patrol sled at the Klondike Derby. Well, good luck, scouts. I think you'll have the weather for it. Before we turn our attention to local sports, let's take a quick look at what is going on in the state's capital. Today's headline from Capital News Illinois, while deficit looms in next year's budget, the current year revenues remain on track, by Ben Zielinski, again from Capital News Illinois, Dateline Springfield. Returns remain on track halfway through Illinois' budget year, though it's next year that is causing concern in the capital. The Governor's Office of Management and Budget projects a $3.2 billion deficit for the fiscal year that begins July 1st, and the number one task facing Governor J.B. Pritzker and the new General Assembly that was seated last week will be to eliminate it. Pritzker is slated to give his budget address on February 19th, facing the largest projected deficit entering a spring session since 2021 when the pandemic hurt state income, though federal stimulus funds and a strong economic recovery helped erase that gap that next year. Since then, the state has enjoyed more robust revenue with little need for new revenue-generating policies until the current year budget that passed in May with about $1 billion in new revenues through a tax hike on sportsbook and businesses, among other changes. But with one-time federal funding in the rearview mirror and the economy slowing, lawmakers face flat revenue projections for the coming year with spending on the rise. As for the current year, revenues are keeping pace with what lawmakers projected when they approved the $53.1 billion spending plan last May. According to the December monthly report from the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, the state brought in $52.6 billion last year, and through December, this year's revenue is $35 million, or 0.1% ahead of the six-month mark of fiscal year 2024. December was a strong month for the state, with revenue up $327 million compared to December of fiscal year 24, driven by income tax receipts. Income tax receipts are up 9.2% so far this year, even as corporate income taxes have declined by 11%. Sales tax receipts rose in December for the third consecutive month, thanks to holiday shopping, and are up now 1.2% for the year. Though revenue remains on track, it also is showing little sign of growth, something the GOMB warned in the fall would be a challenge for lawmakers as they craft a new state budget this spring. As a new General Assembly begins, it remains unclear how lawmakers and the governor plan the projected deficit. Republicans' main concern is Democrats will resort to tax increases to boost revenue and avoid spending cuts. I know they're going to be talking about needing additional revenue, and there's no reason to do that. We're spending almost $20 billion more than we were 8 years ago, Representative C.D. Davidsmeyer, a Republican of Murrayville, who is co-chair of the COGFA, told Capital Illinois News. Pritzker told reporters on Wednesday that tax increases aren't his preferred method, but he didn't elaborate on how he'll propose closing the deficit. That's certainly not the first thing on my list, is thinking about tax increases, Pritzker said. I'm looking at how we can balance the budget within our means. Dissatisfaction with the budget has also grown among Democrats, with several voting against the fiscal year 25 budget last May. The revenue plan passed in the Illinois House with a bare minimum of 60 votes, despite Democrats holding 78 seats in the chamber. Representative Fred Crespo, a Democrat of Hoffman Estates, who voted for the state spending plan but against the revenue bill last year, told Capital News Illinois that Democrats need to revamp their budgeting approach. Let's turn our attention to sports. In the local roundup column today, it says Illinois women take down Indiana. A couple of days after the University of Illinois men picked up a big win at Assembly Hall, it was the Illinois women's turn to dominate on Thursday. The Illini picked up a 68-54 win over Indiana in Big Ten action leading for the final 38 minutes of the game and getting the lead by as much as 15. Kendall Bostic had 21 points with 8 rebounds and 3 assists for Illinois, while Adelia McKenzie had 15 points with 5 rebounds and 4 assists. Barry Wallace had 13 points off the bench, Genesis Bryant had 12 points with 7 assists, and Jasmine Brown Hopper had 7 points with 4 assists and 2 rebounds. The Illini are 13-4 and 3-3 in the Big Ten and will host number 22 Michigan State on Sunday afternoon. I wonder how that game turned out. Some other sports scores from around the area. In prep girls volleyball, Salt Fork beat Westville decidedly 62-19. Oakwood 44 and Georgetown Ridge Farm was 28. And Iroquois West beat Armstrong Potomac girls 42-34. And on the Indiana side of the border, the North Vermilion girls basketball team went outside the Wabash River Conference on Thursday when it hosted Shakamak, and the Falcons, however, saw themselves down 20-5 in the first quarter and couldn't recover in a 46-39 loss. In prep swimming, Seeger wins the triangular. The Seeger swimming team were able to get past North Vermilion and Attica on Thursday in a triangular meet. In the boys' meet, Nick Walpe won the 200-yard individual medley and the 100-yard breaststroke for the Patriots, while Jax Watson won the 50 and 100 freestyle races, and Reed Johnson won the 500 freestyle. Taking a look at prep wrestling, the Bismarck-Henning-Rossville-Alvin Armstrong-Potomac boys wrestling team was able to pick up a 54-24 win over Urbana on Thursday. We are having in today's local roundup. Continuing with looking at what's going on in local sports, some games that are coming up on Monday in prep girls basketball. It's Big 12 versus the Mid-Illini Showdown at Pekin. Danville versus, someone to be determined. So I'm not really sure who they are playing today in that tournament. Also going on is the Vermilion County tournament at DAC, where Bismarck, Henning, Russell, Alvin will play Westville today at 5 p.m. And this is today being Monday the 20th. Vermilion County Tournament at DAC, Hoopston area will be playing Armstrong Potomac at 6:30. And in that same tournament, Salt Fork will be playing Oakwood at 8 p.m. So it looks like there's quite a nice evening of prep women's basketball if you'd like to head over to DAC on Monday. At least it's warm in there, right? In prep boys swimming on Monday, there's South Vermilion will be at North Vermilion at 5 p.m. And the same for prep girls swimming. Men's college basketball, Illinois Central College will be at Danville Community College at 2 o'clock today. And the Illinois Central College will be at Danville at noon for the women's college basketball game. At prep boys basketball, the Vermilion County Tournament at DAC, the boys side of that tournament, Armstrong Potomac will play Salt Fork at 5:15 p.m. And Westville will be playing Georgetown Ridge Farm at 6:45. In college men's basketball, Purdue will be at Oregon will be at Oregon today at 2 p.m. and that show will be on NBC and you can view that on Peacock as well. Wisconsin will be at Southern California on the Big Ten Network at 2 o'clock on Monday, and Loyola Chicago at Dayton on CBS at 3 p.m. Drake will be playing Indiana State on ESPNU at 5 p.m. So lots of college and local tournament highlights today, Monday the 20th. Well, it's a fairly quiet day in the news today, so let's take a look at our final article today. For those of us that are of a certain age, we know all about red dye number 3 is bad, but today's headline says FDA bans red dye number 3 in food products, and Giannoulis is calling for an overhaul to rules governing food additives. Following the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's FDA order banning the use of red dye number 3 in food products, Illinois Secretary of State Alexi Giannoulis renewed his call for an overhaul of the rules governing food additives to eliminate toxic chemicals from the food supply, including candy, snacks, and soda. Last year, Giannoulis pushed for the Illinois Food Safety Act to ensure a healthier food marketplace for Illinois families. The bill called for prohibiting the use of brominated vegetable oil, potassium bromate, propylparaben, red dye number 3, and titanium dioxide, all of which have been linked to serious health problems, including hyperactivity, nervous system damage, reproductive issues, hormonal damage, and increased risk of cancer. Prior to its action on red dye number 3, the FDA banned the use of brominated vegetable oil last July, citing links to thyroid issues. The FDA had authorized the use of red dye number 3 and BVO since the 1960s, equating to decades of consumer exposure to the dangerous additives and their associated health risks. The banning of red dye number 3 in foods came 35 after years after it was barred from cosmetics because of cancer risks. Allowing the company that produces the food to decide if a chemical is safe without having to inform the FDA makes no sense and results in dangerous game for American families to play, Giannulia said. While the recent bans on red dye number 3 and brominated vegetable oil are a step in the right direction, these actions are long overdue and a drop in the bucket considering all the additives linked to negative health outcomes that remain on our shelves today. Well, not the happiest way to end, but this has been Terry Burdick reading to you from today from the Commercial News, the weekend edition, January 18th and 19th.